And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, war still rages in Ukraine. Russia appears to be getting its head handed to it. One of its flagships of the Black Sea Fleet just caught on fire. Today's the 14th day of April, 104th day of the year. 261 days remain till the year's over with. This day in 43 BC, the Battle of Forum Gallorum between the forces of Mark Antony and the legions loyal to the Roman Senate under the overall command of Consul Gaius Pansa. In 69 AD, Vitellius, commander of the Rhine armies, defeats Emperor Otho in the Battle of Bedriacum to take power over Rome. 966, after his marriage to the Christian Dubravka of Bohemia, the pagan ruler of the Polans, Miazo I converts to Christianity, an event considered to be the founding of the Polish state. 972, co-emperor Otto II, a son of Otto I, or Otto the Great as he was called, marries a Byzantine princess, Theophanu. She's crowned empress by Pope John XIII at Rome. And in 1294, Timur, grandson of Kublai, is elected Khagan of the Mongols and emperor of the Yuan dynasty with the reigning titles Jeyetu and Chinzong. 1471 in England, the Yorkist under Edward IV, my ancestor, defeat the Lancastrians under the Earl of Warwick at the Battle of Barnet. The Earl is killed and Edward IV resumes the throne. 1561, a celestial phenomenon is reported over Nuremberg, described as an aerial battle. Many in the UFO community think it was an actual battle. 1639, Imperial forces are defeated by the Swedes at the Battle of Chemnitz. Swedish victory prolongs a 30 years' war and allows them to advance into Bohemia. 1775, the first abolition society in North America is established. The Society for the Relief of Free Negroes and Lawfully Held in Bondage is organized in Philadelphia by Benjamin Franklin and Benjamin Rush. 1816, Bussa, slave in British-ruled Barbados, leads a slave rebellion. For this, he's remembered as the first national hero of Barbados. 1849, Hungary declares itself independent of Austria with the Lajos Kossuth as its leader. 1865, President Lincoln shot at Fort Sheridan on this date by John Wilkes Booth. Lincoln lives till the following day. Now, if you believe the conspiracy theory of all this, Lincoln was wounded, but recovered and moved to Texas because he didn't want to go through a long divorce or be shot again. And Edward Stanton, in effect, ruled as an emperor for a while. He was a secretary of war, and many feel he was involved in the assassination. 1865, U.S. Secretary of State William Seward and his family are attacked at home by Lewis Powell, one of the conspirators with Booth. Seward was injured, but survived. 1881, the four dead in 5 seconds gunfight took place in El Paso in front of the Camino Real Hotel. Problem was, the participants couldn't shoot straight. 1890, the Pan-American Union is founded by the first International Conference of American States in Washington. 1894, the first ever commercial motion picture house opens in New York City, using 10 kinetoscopes, a device for peep show viewing of films. 1900, the World's Fair Exposition Universelle opens in Paris. 1906, the Azusa Street Revival opens and launch Pentecostalism as a worldwide movement. 1908, Hoser Dam, a steel dam in the Missouri River in Montana, fails, sending a surge of water 25 to 30 feet deep downstream. 1909, a massacre is organized by the Ottoman Empire against the Armenian population of Cilicia. 1912, the British passenger liner RSM Titanic hits an iceberg in the North Atlantic at 23:40, and it sinks the morning of April 15th. 1928, the Bremen, a German Junkers W-33 type aircraft, reaches Greenlee Island, Canada, the first successful transatlantic airplane flight from east to west. 1929, the inaugural Monaco Grand Prix takes place in the Principality of Monaco. The race is won by William Grover Williams, driving a Bugatti Type 35. 1931, Spanish Cortez deposes King Alfonso XIII, proclaims his Second Spanish Republic. 1935, the Black Sunday dust storm, considered one of the worst storms in the Dust Bowl, swept across the Oklahoma and Texas panhandles and neighboring states. 1940, World War II, Royal Marines land in Namsos, Norway, in preparation for a larger force to arrive 2 days later. 1941, World War II, German and Italian forces attack Tobruk in Libya. 1944, Bombay explosion. Massive explosion in Bombay in India, the harbor at Bombay, kills 300 and causes economic damage valued at over 20 million pounds in 1944 pounds. 1945, the raising of Forsyth, the 4th Canadian Armored Division, deliberately destroyed the German town of Forsyth and orders of Major General Christopher Volkes. 1958, Soviet satellite Sputnik 2 falls from orbit after a mission duration of 162 days. This is the first spacecraft to carry a living animal, a female dog named Laika, who it's believed lived only a few hours. 1967, Gnassingbé Eyadema overthrows president of Togo, Nicolas Granitsky, and installs himself as the new president. He held that title for the next 20 years. 1978, Tbilisi demonstrations. Thousands of Georgians demonstrated against Soviet attempts to change the constitutional status of the Georgian language. 1981, STS-1, first operational space shuttle. Columbia completes its first test flight. 1986, the heaviest hailstorms ever recorded, 2.2 pounds, falls on Gopalganj district of Bangladesh. 92 people are killed. 1988, USS Samuel B. Roberts strikes a mine in the Persian Gulf during Operation Earnest Will. 1988, United Nations ceremony in Geneva, Switzerland, Soviet Union signs an agreement pledging to withdraw its troops from Afghanistan. 1991, Republic of Georgia introduces the post of president after its declaration of independence from the Soviet Union. 1994, in a U.S.-friendly fire incident during Operation Provide Comfort in northeast Iraq, two U.S. Air Force aircraft mistakenly shoot down two U.S. Army helicopters. 26 people are killed. Now, of course, sometimes you wonder about these friendly fire incidents. 1999, NATO mistakenly bombs a convoy of ethnic Albanian refugees. Yugoslav officials say 75 people are killed. 1999, a severe hailstorm strikes Sydney, Australia, causes $2.3 billion in insured damages. Most costly natural disaster in Australian history. 2002, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez returns to office 2 days after being ousted and arrested by the country's military. 2003, the Human Genome Project is completed with 99% of the human genome sequenced to an accuracy of 99.99%. 2003, U.S. troops in Baghdad capture Abu Abbas, leader of the Palestinian group that killed an American on the hijacked cruise liner, the MS Achille Lauro, in 1985. 2005, the Oregon Supreme Court nullifies marriage licenses issued to same-sex couples a year earlier by Multnomah County. 2006, twin blast triggered by crude bombs during Asher prayer in Jama Masjid, Delhi, injured 13 people. 2010, nearly 2,700 are killed in a magnitude 6.9 earthquake in the Yashu, Tibetan Autonomous Prefecture. 2014, twin bomb blast in Abuja, Nigeria, killed at least 75, injured 141. 2014, 276 school girls are abducted by Boko Haram in Chibok, Nigeria. 2016, in Japan, the foreshock of Kumamoto earthquake occurs on this date. Well, we've got a large number of births and deaths on this date in history. One interesting point. Holidays observances, Ambedkar Dayanti in India, Black Day in Seoul, Korea, and South Korea, rather, Christian Feast Day, Anthony John and Eustathius Benezet, Henry Beard Delaney in the Episcopal Church, Domnina of Terni, Lidwina, Peter Gonzalez, Tibertius, Valerian, and Maximus, commemoration of Anfal genocide against the Kurds in Iraqi Kurdistan, Day of Mologon, Yaroslavl Oblast in Russia. Day of the Georgian language in Georgia. The Vahi language day in the Maldives. The Co-Alphabet day in the Mandi speakers. Pan-American day in several countries in the Americas. South and Southeast Asian New Year celebrated on the sidereal vernal equinox. Assamese New Year or Bohag Bihu in India's Assam Valley. Bengali New Year, or Poheli Boshkan, Bangladesh and India's West Bengal State. Burmese New Year, or Thangyan in Myanmar. Hindu and Sikh New Year in the Punjab region. Khmer New Year, or Chol Chinam Thami in Cambodia. Lao New Year in Laos. Mahi New Year, or Aluthu Aharuduvas in the Maldives and India's Lakshad Sweep in Kerala State. Maithili New Year in the Maithili region. Malaya New Year in India's Kerala State. Nepali New Year in Nepal. Orya or Odi New Year in India's Odisha State. Sinhalese New Year in Sri Lanka. Tamil New Year in India's Tamil Nadu State. Thai New Year, celebrated from the 13th to the 15th of April in Thailand. Tuluva New Year, or Bishu in India's Karnataka state. First day of Takayama Spring Festival in Takayama, Gifu, Japan. And in Angola, it is Youth Day. All right, let's see what else we have. In 43 B.C., we had the Battle of Forum Gallorum. Mark Antony besieging Julius Caesar's assassin, Decimus Junius Brutus and Mutina, defeats the forces of the consul Pansa, who is killed. Brutus was one of the instigators of the assassination of Julius Caesar, and that's why Mark Antony was after him so bad. In 193, Lucius Septimius Severus is crowned Emperor of Rome on this date. 972, Notger becomes the Bishop of Liege. 979, there was a challenge to the throne of King Alfred II of England. 1028, German Emperor Conrad II, also known as the Sailor, crowns his son Henry III as king of a 85-year-old Giacinto Bobo becomes Pope Calixtinus III. 1341, the sack of Saluzzo in Italy by the Italian Angevin troops under Manfred V of Saluzzo. 1361, Henry of Grosmont, the richest peer in England, is buried at the church at the Annunciation of Our Lady of Newark, Leicester, and with the royal family in attendance. 1434, the foundation stone of Cathedral St. Peter and St. Paul in Nantes, France is laid. 1471, War of the Roses, Battle of Barnet. Yorkshire's defeat the Lancastrians and killed the Earl of Warwick. 1536, English King Henry VIII expropriates minor monasteries. In other words, he took them over. 1544, the Battle of Carignano. French troops under the Earl of D'Enghien beat the Swiss. 1570, Polish Calvinists, Lutherans, and Herrnhuters unify against the Jesuits. 1574, the Battle of Mukerheide. Spanish forces of de Avila defeat the Dutch mercenary force led by Louis of Nassau. 1611, the word telescope is first used by Prince Federico Cesi. 1629, England and France signed the Peace of Susa. 1671, the Cossacks capture Russian peasant leader Stenka Razin. 1699, Khalsa, birth of Khalsa, the brotherhood of the Sikh religion in northern India in accordance with the Nanakshahi calendar. 1756, Governor Glenn of South Carolina protests against 900 Acadian Indians. I think he's a little bit outnumbered there. 1775, the first abolitionist society in the U.S. is organized. 1818, U.S. Medical Corps is formed. 1828, British 18-gun sloop HMS Acorn sinks off Halifax. There's 115 men on board. 1828, Noah Webster registered the copyright for the first American dictionary. 1836, Congress forms the territory of Wisconsin. 1841 saw the first detective story published, Edgar Allan Poe's Murders in the Rue Morgue. 1847, Persian, Ottoman, Turkey signed the Second Treaty of Erzurum. 1849, Hungary declares itself independent of Austria with Louis Kossuth as its leader. 1860, the first Pony Express rider arrives in San Francisco from St. Joseph, Missouri. 1861 was the formal Union surrender of Fort Sumter during the American Civil War. 1863, American inventor William Bullock patents the continuous rolling printing press. 1868, South Carolina voters approved the new Constitution. 70,758 to 27,228. 1871, Canada sets the denominations of its currency as dollars, cents, and mills. 1872 saw the Dominion Lands Act passed. That was Canada's Homestead Act. 1872, San Francisco organized the Bar Association, which made legal theft legal. 1890, Pan American Day, the first conference of American states. 1900, the Veterans Hospital at Fort Miley is formed. 1902, man I got to know right before he died, James Cash Penny opened his first store, the Golden Rule Store in Kimmerer, Wyoming. Yeah, back when I was a child, the manager of the Penny store in the town where I lived almost adopted me. And the day before they opened up the toy department for Christmas, because they put a special toy department in the basement, I was given free rein to go pick out anything I wanted. And one year, Mr. Penny was there. And he went through the toy department with me and pointed out what he thought I should take. Now, talk about a haul. That particular event was something else. In 1906, President Theodore Roosevelt denounced the muckrakers in the U.S. press. 1909, the Anglo-Persian Oil Company formed in London. 1910, President William Taft began the tradition of throwing the ceremonial first pitch on opening day of baseball season. 1913, Belgium begins a general strike for voting rights. 1914, Dr. Harry Plotz isolated the bacteria that causes typhus fever at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City. 1914, U.S. head of Firestone Tire and Rubber Company, Stacy Cardhuff, patents non-skid tire patterns. 1915, the Dutch merchant navy ship, Kantwijk, sunk by a German torpedo. Also this date, 1915, Turkey invaded Armenia. 1927, the first Volvo was premiered in Gothenburg, Sweden. 1936, French singer Edith Piaf questioned after the nightclub owner and her patron, Louis Leply, is murdered in Paris. 1939, a novel that I saw absolutely no use for when I was forced to read it in school, John Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath, is published on this date. 1940, Allied troops land in Norway. 1941, King Peter leaves Yugoslavia. And there's also a massive German raid in Paris. 3,600 Jews are rounded up. 1942, the destroyer Roper sinks the German U-85 off the east coast of the U.S. 1943, a JN-25 decrypt by American intelligence detailing forthcoming visit by Marshal Admiral Yamamoto results in his plane being shot down. He is the one that planned Pearl Harbor. When the plane was reached on the ground, he was dead in his seat, his samurai sword between his knees. 1944 that Eisenhower became the Supreme Allied Commander of the Allied Expeditionary Forces. Also in 1945, American planes bombed Tokyo and damaged the Imperial Palace. And the U.S. 7th Army and its allies forces capture Nuremberg and Stuttgart in Germany. 1953, there was a Viet Minh offensive in Laos. Viet Minh are the precursors to the Viet Cong. Alrighty, I think we have pretty much finished our little history segment. You know, we've been, excuse me, we've been talking about a lot of strange and off-the-wall things. We've been talking about UFOs, and we've been talking about almost everything you can think of. But I got some more bizarreness to throw at you today. Where is it at? There have been a lot of discussions about the paranormal on a lot of different shows. And of course, when you deal with the paranormal, since it's not what we're used to seeing, sometimes you don't believe your eyes. Now, every state has various stories that are bizarre. I know my parents bought a brand new house in Macon, Georgia. Nothing had ever been built on that location before. But it was on the edge of what had been a Native American encampment many, many moons before. And where the house sat is where they used to put the dead, because they did not keep them, of course, within the campsite. Now, I had a TV in my room. And one night, a green light about the size of a silver dollar came just kind of meandering across the room and went down behind the TV. After that, that TV would not work in that room. Put it any place else in the house, it would work like a champ, but not in that room. I also had fish disappear into my aquarium. Never could figure out what was wrong with that room. Many stories that I heard about situations like that dealt with the fact that sometimes those little balls of light are actually spirit orbs. Could well be. Now, I did one segment on what I call wandering TV signals, and I got a email that talked about a TV signal from station KLEE. Well, in 1950, KLEE became KPRC in Houston, Texas. Now, the story about this wandering TV signal could be one of the strangest enigmas of modern times. Electronic experts of all levels of training and ability have tried to solve it without any luck. And it's even been suggested that the proper explanation is a mix-up in time. Frank Edwards, who wrote about all kinds of strange things, investigated it and wrote about it. Now, KLEE was a TV station out of Houston. Now, as far as is known, after it changed its call sign in July of 1950, there had been no broadcast anywhere in the world of a KLEE TV signal. But signals from KLEE TV have been received not once, but repeatedly at various locations. And the reception has been reported not from around Houston, but from areas as far apart as London, England, and Milwaukee, Wisconsin. In fall of 1953, in the winter of 1954, Paul Hundorf, chief engineer of KPRC-TV, got letters from England reporting reception of the KLEE call letters. Charles Batlin from London and Atlantic Electronics Limited of Lancaster, England, stated they picked up the call letters KLEE-TV many times between September 14th, 1953 and July 8th, 1954. They even sent photographs of their TV screens with their letters to prove what they were saying. Now, this, of course, brings up two mysteries. Not just one, but two. The first is that television signals ordinarily are not received beyond line-of-sight distances. Now, today, of course, especially with streaming, maybe it's around the world. But in those days, that was not the case. I just got a peculiar text. Now, unlike ordinary broadcast radio waves, TV signals don't rebound from the ionosphere, but they penetrate it and go on into space. Now, this isn't always the case, but sometimes electronic conditions are such that TV signals can be reflected from the electronics layer encasing the Earth and received at a great distance. And it's not beyond the realm of possibility that signals from a TV station in Texas could be reflected a long distance, maybe as far as England. But that such signals should be reflected repeatedly while other U.S. signals are not is all but impossible. And there's an even bigger mystery involving the KLEE signals. As far as anybody knows, the last official KLEE TV signal was broadcast in July of 1950, more than 3 years before these so-called unauthorized signals were reported. Now, it's been suggested that the signals, of course, are a hoax. But then comes the question of who can afford the TV equipment capable of broadcasting these signals. Even from point to point within England, it costs tens of thousands and possibly hundreds of thousands of dollars. And it's strictly illegal to make such a broadcast. And who'd want to risk costly equipment on a pointless venture? Because if the police found it, they'd confiscate it. Chief engineer of the British Broadcasting Corporation, when questioned, was quoted by saying, "We're confronted in this instance with a set of circumstances that are at variance with accepted knowledge of television transmission. It's unthinkable that these signals could have been circling the Earth for the period of time since that station last broadcast them. It's physically impossible they could have been reflected to us by chance from a celestial body at such a vast distance. And that leaves just one possibility. Bizarre as it sounds, these signals are transmitted to us purposefully and intelligently from a source and for a purpose presently unknown." Well, in spite of the brouhaha, this would have been forgotten in all likelihood, but on November 23rd, 1955, H.C. Taylor, one of the electronic specialists who reported the original reception, turned on his TV for long-range reception and aired with the mysterious letters again. KLEE-TV. Mr. Taylor, if you recall, lives in Morecambe, Lancashire, England. Now, it seems unlikely that claims as sensational as this could go unchallenged indefinitely. And sure enough, in February 1960, a debunker came up with the perfect explanation. According to Charlotte Phelan, writing in the Sunday Houston Post of February 14, 1960, she said an aged inventor in England had faked the signal and actually had transmitted a copy of a station identification card. Now, in spite of her statement, the name of this aged inventor was lacking. Even so, in order to try to make the world a more understandable place, the explanation, true or not, was accepted. Now, the biggest problem with this explanation is that the photographs sent to engineer Paul Hundorf at KPRC-TV were identified by him as showing the standard call letter slide actually used by KLEE-TV. Not a reproduction, the actual slide. So how did this unnamed aged inventor happen to get a hold of that slide? Well, in spite of the questions about the veracity of the Charlotte Phelan's article, that would have pretty much put it to rest, except KLEE wrote again. In February 1962, Ms. Rosella Rose of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, turned on her TV and got the station. It wasn't until June 16th of that year, though, having just finished reading about this particular mystery in Frank Edwards' book, Strangest of All, that she realized she was looking at a mystery. Well, she wrote a letter to Mr. Edwards and said, "I've just finished your book, Strangest of All. It brought to mind something I'd like to report. This year, along the last of February, I was trying to get a program on TV for a short rest before starting home from a long day's work. It's about 7 or 7:30 in the evening. And on turning on the TV, I got station KLEE. Now, I had never heard of this station, didn't know where it was. The KLEE flicked on and off several times before any sound or picture came through. Picture came first, showing a woman running toward what looked like a balcony. And she was followed by a man who caught up with her, and they seemed to be talking, but at first I couldn't make out what was said. Then the words came through. The girl said, "Let me go. I'm going to tell the world what you plan on doing." She made this statement to the man she'd been running from. Picture changed slightly, showing the back, head, and shoulders of a second man, who said something that the viewer couldn't understand. Apparently a question by the second man and answered by the girl. Then the second man said, "Well, you can't do that. It'd be a catastrophe." Well, at that point, the picture faded out and the KLEE logo flashed on again. But there was a strange addition to this particular identification, superimposed over the KLEE, which was still showing, the word "help" flashed on and off, and then the screen went black. She said she waited to see if it come on again, and it didn't. And it was over a channel where they never get a channel in that area. She was alone at the time, and in closing up for the night, didn't think any more about it until she got home. Then she checked the TV news section in the papers, and there was no KLEE listed. So she thought maybe it was a station from further away, not one listed normally in the papers in Milwaukee. And then she saw Frank Edwards' book, Signals from Space, the chapter signals some space, which knocked her for a loop. Well, there's been already a lot of speculation about this particular mystery, but if facts are correct, more speculation is certainly warranted. People as far apart as flying saucer aficionados on one hand and F.D. Drake on the other were concerned. Dr. Drake was associate astronomer at the National Radio Astronomy Observatory at Greenbank, West Virginia. Greenbank spends its time and money trying to make radio contact with life in other planetary systems. And one of the possibilities discussed was that the KLEE signals have been rebroadcast by intelligences out in space. Now, from a less scientific viewpoint, this is also the attitude of the UFO followers, but they suggested that signals are being rebroadcast by flying saucers orbiting the Earth. Now, another suggestion made by Chief Engineer Hundorf is that the TV waves may be penetrated the ionosphere into space and reflected back when it hit a celestial object several light years away. Which is an interesting theory, but the BBC chief engineer thinks that's physically impossible. And furthermore, there are too many reports of this wayward signal being received and seems unlikely that an already unlikely one-time accident could be repeated periodically. Another proposal, likewise rejected by the BBC chief engineer, was that the signals were just wandering around in space all that time until somehow they found their way back to just a few TV sets on Earth. Of course, the same basic objections apply here. The strength of the signals, the repetitious receptions, which are too frequent to be coincidental, and absence of any theory that would account for these wanderings. And an equally far-out theory offered in Fate magazine back in 1954 is that time itself might have folded back, and through some trick, the signals were received a fraction of a second after they were broadcast on one plane, and while on the other plane, 3 or 4 years had elapsed. The bottom line is, we're living in a universe full of mysteries, and the KLEE enigma reinforces a realization, even though it appears to deepen the mystery rather than help solve it. Now, another interesting conundrum is the discussion of teleportation. Is it science fiction or science fact? Now, certainly, we all are familiar with the command, energize, given by Starfleet crewmen in Star Trek. When that command is given in an instant, individuals or cargo will dematerialize into their component atoms and be beamed onto a strange planet far below the orbiting USS Enterprise. And there, the constituent atoms will be magically reintegrated in their original whole form. 1966, when that show first aired, such a means of transport filled viewers with awe and wonder. But science fiction writers have been using the theme of teleportation far longer than most people realize. In fact, as far back as 1877, author Edward Page Mitchell used that concept in his book, The Man Without a Body. Early as 1927, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, creator of Sherlock Holmes, explored the concept in his story, The Disintegration Machine. And modern-day authors have utilized the idea of teleportation in a variety of ways, such as Isaac Asimov's It's Such a Beautiful Day, Stephen King's The Jaunt, Ringworld by Larry Niven, Jumper by Stephen Gould, and numerous others. You know, for movies such as Stargate and Doom and The Terminator, the theme of teleportation has been an endless source of ideas for writers. From television shows, movies, video games, books, people never seem to tire of wondering what it would be like to teleport oneself to any point on the globe in a blink of an eye. You could have lunch at an outdoor cafe in Paris, be back in L.A. to take your laundry out of the washing machine and fold it, and then go back to your table in Paris for dessert. But the concept of actual teleportation has only been fantasy, found in the realm of science fiction. But 40 years beyond when the Star Trek TV show aired, that line may no longer be so clear-cut. You know, what exactly is teleportation or matter transmission? We can transmit sound over vast distances instantaneously using carrier waves such as radio broadcast. We can transmit electronic images as well as in TV. They're two-dimensional. But the transmission of a solid object, animate or inanimate, wirelessly over the global distance, well, that's three-dimensional. And so far, officially, that doesn't exist. But when you're talking about three-dimensional transmission, we're getting into infinitely more complex technology. And let's face it, would you be the volunteer to be the first living subject to be teleported 10,000 miles in the blink of an eye? If you ever saw the movie The Fly, in order to come up with an image of what kind of nightmare is possible there. Well, this didn't stop the U.S. Air Force from undertaking a $7 million 2004 project entitled Teleportation Physics Study. At least a dozen companies, plus scientists and universities from the U.S., Austria, Denmark, and China, are actively pursuing teleportation experiments. So you have to ask yourself, what stage of teleportation are we capable of now? Well, no matter how you look at it, as far as the population knows, we're a long way from Kirk and Picard's transporter. Right now, scientists are experimenting with quantum teleportation. More like a repliporter of information rather than solid matter. But it is a beginning. What researchers are using now to achieve the instantaneous transmission of information without having to traverse the intervening space is a strange property called quantum entanglement. It describes the weird behavior where two particles can have the same properties and be connected, even though they're millions of light years apart. Think of two identical tuning forks at opposite ends of a large empty room. When one is struck, the other starts sympathetically vibrating as well. That's what quantum entanglement is. Though on a scale of trillions of times greater, a change in one particle is instantly mirrored in the other. Now, those that are really into the New Age will instantly see the parallel to the philosophy of everything in the universe is interconnected. Even Albert Einstein referred to it as spooky action at a distance. It's not so much teleporting an atom or photon to a distant location, but rather the reincarnation of an exact copy of it at the receiver point. And this process would also destroy the original, which balances things out. Bioethicists having fits over the concept, contemplating the unpleasant implications for 22nd century teleportation of people if it becomes feasible. You might look at it as sort of a cosmic fax machine. What comes out is not the original, but actually an exact copy. 2010, Chinese scientists teleported an ion a distance of 10 miles. Considering that the record a year earlier was only a few yards, that's a phenomenal process. Ironically, quantum entanglement theory may soon point the way toward the development of, if not teleportation itself, quantum computers, using information carrying light instead of wires to crunch data. Eventually, their inconceivably fast processing power might someday provide the missing component we'll need to scan a human being in a reasonable amount of time as part of the teleportation process if we ever want to teleport people. A quantum computer could quickly perform calculations that would take today's supercomputers 13 billion years to accomplish. Teleporting a human being, according to physicist Eric Davis, would require scanning every item in an individual's body. That's more than a trillion using a computer with a 1.028 kilobyte storage capacity. You need 100 quintillion of today's supercomputers to scan one human being. And that would take 2,400 times the age of the universe to do it.
And to dematerialize, one human would require the energy equivalent of 331 megaton thermonuclear bombs. And when you listen to all that, then think about Professor Simon Newcomb, an astronomer who proved that powered flight was impossible. A few months after he published his paper, a couple of bicycle mechanics who didn't know it was impossible, you know them as the Wright brothers, took off in an airplane. So what was the professor's problem? Well, his math was absolutely perfect. The assumption was flawed. You start out with a flawed assumption, and everything after that is going to be flawed as well. On a wintry day of December 1903, the Wright brothers flew a distance shorter than the wingspan of a modern 747. But 66 years later, less than the span of a human lifetime, men are walking on the moon. I know some of you disagree with that, but odds are we did go to the moon. As scientist and author Arthur Clarke said, when a distinguished but elderly scientist states something is impossible, he's almost certainly right. That something is possible, he's almost certainly right. When he states that something is impossible, he's probably wrong. He also said, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And, you know, the concept's probably not lost on those that followed the UFO field, that certain close encounters of the third kind, as well as abductee cases and reported aliens' use of teleportation technology. Well, the aliens seem to be able to do it just fine. But who in 1911 could have possibly predicted the scientific advancements we take for granted today? And who can possibly predict the technological wonders coming 100 years from now, or even 50 years? It's enough just to wonder at the possibilities. Now, let's talk about an event that happened in March of 1956. It was a cold, snowy day in Niagara Falls, New York. And the man in question, his name was John Otto, was away on a business trip that had kept him away from Chicago and home for weeks. Now, it might have been just the weather, but it may have been something that happened in his business. For whatever reason, he had a great yearning to be home. And as he stumbled through the snow toward his rooming house, it occurred to him that a phone call to Chicago might be just what he needed to help dispel his oppressive loneliness. At the end of the telephone call, he told his wife his work would keep him in the East for at least another 2 weeks. Spent the rest of the evening reading and finally went to bed. But he couldn't go to sleep. The yearning to be home had been increased rather than lessened by the telephone call. He had never experienced such homesickness, he said later. Well, he wondered what time it was and the lights were out, so he lit his cigarette lighter and saw the watch said 10 p.m. He lay in the dark, thinking fondly of home and his wife and his daughter and son, and even their parakeet that normally joined him when he ate his meals. Well, as he lay there, he began to visualize mentally a trip back to Chicago. And he did as the mystic suggested. He went through all the details of the trip step by step. He thought to himself, this is interesting. Here I am in Cleveland on his way back, but how am I to know that I'm really here now? Beginning his mental trip again, he meticulously went through each segment, driving out of Buffalo on Route 20, then to Cleveland. Continued west to Chicago, where he became even more excited in visualizing all the exact details. Up the outer drive he went, visualizing every landmark sign, the traffic, even the view of Lake Michigan is seen from the drive. Everything down to the finest detail existed. Put there by the hundreds of times he'd made that trip. And finally, it was the front door of his apartment building on the north side of Chicago. It was a very vivid imaginary trip. He walked to the elevator, paused to decide whether to ride the elevator or go up the short flight of steps. He pushed the button, got off the elevator, walked down the short distance of carpeted hallway to his apartment door, turned the door handle, and the door opened. It wasn't locked. When he went in, he had the feeling he was expected, but it was only an hour since he'd told his wife he'd be delayed for 2 weeks. Well, going through the front room, he glanced at the couch where his son usually slept, and he wasn't there. Street lights shone into the room from Sheridan Road, and he saw clearly the bed where he and his wife and daughter were apparently deep asleep. Looked around at the familiar surroundings, the pictures, the furniture. Noticed something he seemed to consider unusual. He could see himself in the mirror of the dresser next to the bed. He even saw his shadow cast by the lights from Sheridan Road. Reached over his daughter and touched his wife on the shoulder, and she reacted instantly. She sat upright and stared directly at him. He sensed a great fear. He was picking up her emotions, but her thoughts were unknown to him. Possibly the fear content of her thoughts had blocked their meaning and his understanding. At that precise instant, he was filled with the feeling of not wanting to frighten her. At the same time, he wanted to know the cause of her fear. And then suddenly he was back in his room in the rooming house in Niagara Falls. Lay on his bed for hours reflecting on what had happened. The feeling of fear was still with him as he had sensed it when looking into his wife's eyes after he touched her. That experience remained vivid, and he reasoned it had been just as vivid for his wife. It surely would have frightened her. Well, it was dawn before he went to sleep. Eventually, he went back home to Chicago. Neither he or his wife mentioned that experience. He felt if his wife had experienced anything in connection with it, she surely would have said something. If she experienced nothing, there was nothing to talk about. Late in May, early June, they attended a party with a group of friends in Elmwood Park. A guest from New York, Irwin Vaxel, had been doing a great deal of discussion and argument, to which he listened intently. And finally, he decided to tell his story. After he described his experience, there was a moment of silence, and everybody started to ask questions at once. Well, he responded he had no way to validate it, and suddenly his wife said, "Why didn't you tell me you did that?" Well, his surprise at her outburst must have been obvious to everybody, and turning to her, he said, "I wasn't sure you'd seen me, and if you did, why didn't you tell me about it?" She said, "You scared me half to death. Why'd you punch me so hard in the chest?" He said, "I didn't punch you. I just tapped you lightly." Well, the friends were excited, of course, and this new development was exciting to him as well. First question was about the substance of the figure his wife had seen. Could she consider it a physical figure or a wispy ghost-like entity or merely an image in her mind? And she said, "Oh, no, you were there. You leaned across Lisa and poked me real hard on the chest." He said, "I know I did, but could you see me? Could you see through me, or was I solid?" She said, "As far as I know, you were actually there. I saw you just as I see you now." He asked if there was anything else, any little detail she could remember, and she said no. And then he asked her to go through the entire experience. Well, at the moment, we're out of time. We'll talk more about this particular situation in our next show. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for The Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.